Welcome to the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Produced at the Recording Library of West Texas. Your narrator is Jack.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading Cowboys and Indians magazine. We set our itinerary for historical sites that tell the stories of the West. Heritage Trail by Chuck Thompson. There are a lot of ways to appreciate the West, but none beats visiting the places where horses were saddled, shots were fired, and the frontier was confronted. And nothing beats the National Park Service for making it a breeze to do just that. Though typically associated with sprawling parks filled with wildlife and other natural wonders, over half the areas in the National Park System are dedicated to preserving places that commemorate the people and events that shaped American history. There are too many attractions central to Western history to hit in a single road trip. That didn't stop us from compiling this short list of historic stops to help us and you get a jump on summer travel plans. See you on the trail. Mesa Verde National Park, Southwest Colorado, commemorates ancestral Pueblo, also known as Anasazi. No matter how many times you see it, the Cliff Palace at Mesa Verde National Park doesn't seem real. It looks more like something from a sci-fi film set or a graphic novel. A spectacular remnant of the ancestral Pueblo culture that resided here from about AD 550 to 1300. The park contains nearly 5,000 known archaeological sites, including pit houses, pueblos, masonry towers, and farming structures. But it's the cliff dwellings, built of sandstone, mortar, and wooden beams, that inspire the most open jaws and photos. The best way to appreciate the amazing architecture is with a guided cliff dwelling tour, but a number of short and longer hikes allow for independent exploration of this wonder of human construction, where evidence has been found that builders used the sophisticated golden ratio, a mathematical ratio employed at the Giza pyramids to construct their sun temple. High Point, at 8,572 feet, Park Point offers spectacular views across the rugged Four Corners region. Lewis and Clark National Historic Park, Astoria, Oregon, commemorates Core of Discovery. The legend of the Lewis and Clark expedition is so enormous that it's startling to walk into the party's reconstructed Fort Clatsop and see just how small the place was where the Corps of Discovery spent the winter of 1805 to 06. The pair of low-roofed log buildings that housed 32 men, one woman, a baby, and a dog over the course of a rainy winter nevertheless stands as a symbol of the frontier fortitude that still courses through the West. Though through displays, trails, canoe trips, and tours of the humble encampment at the end of the trail, visitors viscerally connect with the mission president Thomas Jefferson charged Captain Meriwether Lewis to lead along with Second Lieutenant William Clark. The expedition started up the Missouri River from near St. Louis on May 14, 1804, with the aim of establishing the most direct water route to the Pacific, making scientific and geographic observations, and interacting with indigenous peoples along the way. After journeying some 4,000 miles, they reached this spot on the edge of the Pacific coast in late November 1805, opening the age of westward expansion and etching their names alongside the immortals of global exploration. Beach Break, south of Fort Clatsop, the soft sands of Sunset Beach make it great for an afternoon picnic. You can drive or walk there in the way Lewis and Clark did along a 6.5-mile route now called the Fort to Sea Trail. Spanish colonial mission trails, California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas, commemorates Spanish colonization. The 21 missions that comprise California's historic mission trail are justifiably famous for their beauty and their history. Located on or near Highway 101, they stretch from the first, San Diego de Acala, in San Diego, to the 21st, San Francisco Solano, in Sonoma. Originally humble, thatched roof structures, according to California Department of Parks and Recreation, which administers them, they now dot the landscape on what was once Alta California, with stately adobes. But how to reconcile the grandeur of these gorgeous structures with the cultural genocide that unfolded within their ornate walls? People who think the missions were places of cultural genocide and terrible population decline can look at this database and they'll see that people came into the missions and died soon after, says historian Stephen Hackle, editor of the 2006 Early California Population Project, a data bank compiled by historians chronicling the experiences of more than 100,000 Native Americans swept into California missions in the 18th and 19th centuries. People who want to see something else in the missions can look here too. It also shows tremendous Indian persistence and attempts to maintain their own communities within the missions. As with the mission trail in California, the Spanish missions of the Southwest challenge the visitor for the cultural coercion they'll find there. Like the Native Americans in the mission system in the Golden State, those who entered missions of the Southwest seeking shelter and medical help were required to forswear their language and customs to conform with the Spanish colonialists' obsession with converting them to Catholicism. Tribes and interactions varied widely across the Southwest, making each mission unique. But in general, the missionaries sought to eradicate among missionized natives all appearances of indigenous religion and culture, according to the Texas State Historical Association. Encompassing more than 35 sites across Texas, Arizona, and New Mexico, the Southwest missions, reflecting Gothic, Moorish, and Romanesque architectural styles, also present a logistical challenge. Visiting any one location guarantees an unforgettable interaction with Spanish history in the West. But the San Antonio missions, a group of five missions established between 1718 and 1731 and designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 2015, may be the best place to begin. The Texas Trail, a 13.9-mile pedestrian hike, starts at the Alamo and winds 9 miles along the San Antonio River, passing four other historic missions. The Alamo, Mission San Antonio de Valero, San Antonio, Texas, commemorates Texas Revolution. Although part of the Park Service's Spanish colonial missions of the Southwest travel itinerary, this San Antonio landmark merits its own entry as an enduring symbol of courage, military skill, and the quest for self-sovereignty. The story is well known, yet retold no less because of it. During the Texas Revolution, a small garrison of Texan soldiers defended the Alamo against the Mexican army led by General Santa Anna. With a force of 5,000 soldiers arriving in San Antonio in February 1836, Santa Anna's siege lasted 13 days. By the end, Mexico lost 1,544 men in the fighting, and 187 Texans died, including Davy Crockett and Jim Bowie. Their defeat and deaths became a rallying cry for the independent Texas spirit that echoes to this day. A redevelopment plan for the site has been in the works, but not without controversy, since 2014. According to the San Antonio Report, the latest iteration of the plan assures that the cenotaph, a 1930s-era monument that honors the Alamo defenders who died, will not be moved, nor will any walls or barriers around the plaza be removed, nor its floor lowered, allowing fiesta parades to continue long-standing traditions. The three historic buildings across from the Alamo Church will not be demolished, but will be instead be renovated to house the visitor center and museum. In the meantime, the Alamo Long Barrack, adjacent to the Alamo Church, has recently reopened to the public after 2 years of preservation work. The most rewarding part of visiting now is the chance to interact with Alamo guides, known as living historians. Hands-on demonstrations recreate daily life at the time of the Texas Revolution, including essential skills such as fire starting, leather working, and frontier medicine. Sounds and fury. Firings of flintlock muskets, the kind used during the Battle of the Alamo, take place on weekends. Bring earplugs. Bent's Old Fort National Historic Site, La Junta, Colorado, commemorates Santa Fe Trail commerce. The most important trading post along the Santa Fe Trail might be a reconstruction, but it sure feels original. The minute you walk through its massive adobe walls, you sense the spirit of the traders, trappers, travelers, and tribes, primarily Southern Cheyenne, Arapaho, Comanche, and Kiowa, who came together here in peaceful terms for trade in the 1830s and 1840s along the Santa Fe Trail. There's a self-guided tour, but it's more fun to join a group led by a park interpreter dressed in period clothing. They'll tell you about fur trader and rancher William Bent, who built not one but two forts and married not one but several daughters of Cheyenne Chief White Thunder. Built in 1833, Bent's old fort along the Arkansas River, which was then near the Mexican border and in what's now southeastern Colorado, was abandoned in 1849 due to disease and disasters. It later saw service as a stagecoach stop and was also used by ranchers before finally dissolving in a flood. Bent completed a new fort in 1853, building it near present-day Lamar, Colorado, as Cheyenne Chief Yellow Wolf had advised. Bent's Castle of the Plains became, according to the Park Service, a melting pot of different cultures and languages brought together by the prospect of trade. Today, it's a melting pot of resident animals, including an ox, horse, mules, goats, chickens, peacocks, and cats. The cats greet visitors, but cat skeletons found by archaeologists have led to speculation that back in the day, cats could have been used to protect the pelts from rodents. Grassland Bargain. For a must-see attraction with lots to explore, the $10 entry fee, kids 15 and under get in free, is one of the best deals on the range. Washita and Little Bighorn Battlefields, Cheyenne, Oklahoma, Crow Agency, Montana, commemorates American Indian Wars. The ghostly Montana side of Custer's Last Stand recalls one of the most famous events in frontier history. But it's impossible to comprehend the battle that took place there without the context of Washita. A visit to both sites is imperative for understanding the full arc of the tragedy unleashed by the U.S. government's policy of relentless punishment of Plains Indians. In the early morning hours of November 27, 1868, Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer led four battalions of the U.S. 7th Cavalry in an attack on Chief Oklahoma's Washita River. Two-thirds of the village, barefoot and half-clothed, escaped downriver, Custer and some 689 soldiers killed 59 people and took all of the horses and pack animals. Later in the morning, Custer unexpectedly found himself surrounded by 1,500 Cheyenne, Kiowa, Comanche, and Plains Apache warriors from the nearby camps, who began to attack when he killed 650 horses and used the remaining ones to transport the women and children taken captive. He was able to withdraw to the north and escape. His last stand would not be at the Battle of Washita. Not quite 8 years later, on June 25th, 26th, 1876, that fateful, famous battle would unfold along the ridges and ravines of the Little Bighorn River. Known as the Battle of the Greasy Grass to Lakota and other Plains Indians, the Battle of the Little Bighorn was, of course, where an alliance of Sioux, Northern Cheyenne, and four Arapaho, who were captives of the Sioux, dealt the U.S. 7th Cavalry a resounding defeat and killed Custer. Today, at both battlefields, visitors can walk trails to get a sense of the battles from the precise locations where action occurred. As important, through understanding visitor centers, interpretive displays, and artifacts, the sites offer austere and weirdly beautiful settings to reflect on and commemorate the lives lost, not just as at these pivotal engagements, but throughout the U.S. government's campaign against the American Indian. Still standing, the Real Byrd family's Battle of Little Bighorn reenactment is scheduled for June 24th to 26th, 2022. LittleBighornReenactment.com. Golden Spike National Historical Park, Promontory, Utah, commemorates Transcontinental Railroad. Never has the single swing of a mall meant so much. Although more famous today for the namesake university he co-founded with his wife, when Central Pacific Railroad President Leland Stanford drove the famed Golden Spike into a Laurelwood Railroad tie at Promontory Point, Utah on May 10, 1869, he was hailed as the man who completed America's Transcontinental Railroad. In fact, according to the Park Service, after Stanford flubbed his ceremonial whack, the job was completed by a regular trail worker. Nevertheless, the occasion was arguably the most transformative in Western history. In a speech on July 4, 1982, President Ronald Reagan called the landing of the Space Shuttle Columbia the historical equivalent to the driving of the Golden Spike. Today, Golden Spike is a small park that carries a much larger story. Along with a location monument and replicas of the steam locomotives that, at the conclusion of the Golden Spike ceremony, rolled in from the east and west tracks until they nearly touched, the park features a 1.5-mile hiking trail and two driving tours that allow visitors to motor along the 1869 railroad grade and take in the last remnant phase of one of humankind's most remarkable industrial achievements. Reenactments of the last spike ceremony are held Saturdays in the summer. Chaco Culture National Historic Park, New Mexico, commemorates ancient civilization. Most of the sites on this list relate to American or even world history. If you follow TV series such as Ancient Aliens or Mysteries of the Outdoors, you might know some observers consider this massive center of ancient civilization to be a piece of cosmic history. Both shows have visited the area, which boasts 4,000 or so archaeological sites, and speculated on the possibility that its buildings, formations, and petroglyphs may have been influenced by beings from outer space. While there's definitely an aura of celestial mystery surrounding the desert marvel, officially the ruins of imposing structures built by ancestral Pueblo, also known as Anasazi people, whose culture flowered here during the mid to late 800s, still testify to the organizational and engineering abilities not seen anywhere else in the American Southwest. Within the park, 16 Chaco Great Houses represent the largest, best preserved, and most complex prehistoric architectural structures in North America. Chetro Kettle is a highlight, one of the larger, greater houses. It has about 400 rooms, and archaeologists estimate took more than 500,000 labor hours, 26,000 trees, and 50 million sandstone blocks to build. Chaco Culture's light pollution-free night sky is in its remote desert location, makes it a spectacular site for stargazing and earned it a certification as an International Dark Sky Park from the International Dark Sky Association. Grant Corps Ranch National Historic Site, Deer Lodge, Montana, commemorates open range cattle era. Although less heralded than other sites on this list, but hailed by the Park Service as the only cultural resource of its kind in the 401-unit national park system, this 1,600-acre working cattle ranch is a gem of cultural preservation along Montana's I-90 corridor between Butte and Missoula. Once an empire sprawling over nearly 10 million acres, the original Grant Corps Ranch was established when Conrad Corps partnered with half-brother John Bielenberg in 1866 to buy land from Canadian fur trader John Grant. Today, with 88 historic buildings and more than 10 miles of ranch roads and trails, the 2.3-mile Big Gulch Trail provides vista views, the frontier cattle era is showcased in a way that's a blast to interact with. You'll see things done the old-fashioned way, from blacksmithing horseshoes to haying the fields with draft teams. Extensive archive and museum collections, ranger cowboys to talk to, and plenty of wide-open spaces keep visitors engaged. The open-range cattle industry lasted only 3 decades, but its legacy lives on with this frontier landmark, summed up in 1913 by one of its namesake owners, Conrad Corps. They were a rugged set of men, these pioneers, well qualified for their self-assumed task. In the pursuit of wealth, a few succeeded, and the majority failed. The range cattle industry has seen its inception, zenith, and partial extinction all within a half century. Those days may be gone, but an afternoon at Grant Corps puts them right at the end of the reins. The unique value, bring your own horse, and you can ride in the park like the cowboys who once ranged here for the Coors and Bielenberg Land and Livestock Company. Manzanar National Historic Site, Independence, California, commemorates World War II Japanese internment. All of a sudden, we saw this barbed wire fence. That was the first time I felt criminalized. All of a sudden, your life has changed. When Hank Umamoto spoke those words to NBC News in 2015 at the age of 87, the pain of being incarcerated at Manzanar was still evident. We really were in a concentration camp, said survivor Joyce Okazaki. In the aftermath of Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, Japanese Americans of the West Coast were deemed a threat to national security. In 1942, the U.S. government rounded up and sent approximately 112,000, by war's end the number would grow to 120,000, men, women, and children of Japanese ancestry to hastily erected relocation centers around the West. The military-style camps, in reality prisons, would be their home for the rest of the war. Dust, dirt, and wood shavings covered the linoleum that had been laid over manure-covered boards, the smell of horses hung in the air, and the whitened corpses of many insects still clung to the hastily whitewashed walls. Today, Manzanar is one of 3 Park Service National Historic Sites and Monuments. The other are Minidoka in Jerome, Idaho, and Tule Lake in northeastern California, where visitors can walk the grounds of an original internment camp with visitor center, barracks, watchtowers, barbed wire, and other reconstructive facilities to absorb the tragic history and reflect on one of the darkest episodes in 20th century America. A fourth, the Granada Relocation Center, a.k.a. Camp Amache, in southeastern Colorado, is on track to be officially designated a National Historic Site. Dwindling generation. For 50 years, Japanese Americans who were incarcerated have congregated on the last Saturday in April with family and other supporters at Mazanar National Historic Site for a day of remembrance, virtually since the pandemic. Hubble Trading Post National Historic Site, Ganado, Arizona, commemorates Navajo and settler meeting ground. Pulling up today in the dusty parking lot, it's not too hard to imagine the days in the late 1800s when you'd have ridden up and tied up your horse to the hitching posts to do some trading at the Hubble Trading Post. The oldest trading post continuously serving the Navajo Nation, it's notable not just for the Navajo rugs, jewelry, and Native American art still on offer inside, but for its historic significance as a meeting and trading place for Navajo and settlers coming to the area to trade. Considered the foremost Navajo trader of his time, John Lorenzo Hubble bought the trading post in 1878, and it's been trading ever since. During the Navajo's imprisonment in Bosque Redondo, or Wieldy, as the Navajo people refer to it, they were introduced to and provided with rations that were foreign to them. This included sugar, flour, coffee, beans, and more. When Mr. Hubble arrived, he had these items in stock, as well as new and innovative items that were being introduced into the area off the reservation. The trader was often the intermediary between the reservation and the ever-evolving outside world, says Park Ranger William Yazzie. More than an astute businessman who would eventually own 24 trading posts, a wholesale house, and ranch properties, Hubble had an enduring influence on Navajo rug weaving and silversmithing, for he consistently demanded and promoted excellence in craftsmanship, according to the Park Service. Hubble family members operated the trading post until 1967, when they sold to the Park Service. Currently operated under the Western National Parks Association, the site still has a trader who works with artists from all over the Navajo Reservation, as well as neighboring tribes. The park is best experienced on free ranger-led tours and house peaks of the mostly old territorial-style adobe buildings. There's the actual trading post, which resembles a fort with its high stone walls and bars on the windows. Other buildings include the Hubble residence, bread oven, barn, blacksmith shop, root cellar, bunkhouse, and a traditional female hogan. There's also a visitor center, which served as a schoolhouse and a chapter house for the Ganado community. The manager's residence, where managers would stay and operate the trading post while Hubble was away on business. A chicken coop, which houses the resident turkey and chickens, and a corral where the retired park horse lives. Shopping tip. The Friends of Hubble Trading Post, Inc.'s annual auctions take place in Gallup, New Mexico on May 7th and September 24th of this year.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading from True West Magazine, History of the American Frontier. This is the first feature article we're reading from the June 2022 edition. Gunpowder and Smoke by Bill Markley. The West was immense, and frontier law enforcement sparse. Wise individuals carried firearms and knew how to use them. Some men and women became notorious for their real or perceived gun handling abilities. Wild Bill Hickok, Bat Masterson, and Calamity Jane, to name a few. Each state and territory was assigned a U.S. Marshal who hired deputies to undertake federal matters. Occasionally, the Army helped to maintain order. Some states established statewide law enforcement agencies, such as the Texas Rangers. Each county elected a sheriff. Marshals were elected or appointed to maintain order within town and city limits. Cattlemen's associations hired stock detectives. Individuals and businesses hired detective agencies, such as the Pinkertons. And citizens formed vigilance committees to handle undesirable characters. Let's visit 10 localities associated with gunfighters, where you might catch a whiff of gun smoke or get a feel for what it might have been like in a Wild West gunfighter town. Tombstone, Arizona. Tombstone has to be one of the top gunfighter towns. When Ed Shiflin left Fort Huachuca searching for precious minerals, legend has it that soldiers, or friends and fellow miners, said the only thing he would find was his tombstone. In 1877, Ed discovered silver ore east of the San Pedro River and named one claim the Tombstone, and the resulting boomtown became Tombstone. The West's most famous gun battle erupted here, the gunfight at the OK Corral, actually behind the corral. On October 26, 1881, a feud came to a head between lawmen Wyatt, Virgil, and Morgan Earp, along with deputized Doc Holliday, and cowboys Ike and Billy Clanton, and Frank and Tom McClory. The Earps and Holliday confronted the Clantons and McClorys. Who shot first? That's disputed. But after multiple shots, both McClory brothers and Billy Clanton were dead, and all on the Earp side were wounded, except Wyatt. Tombstone will not bore you. Walk where the Earps and Holliday walked to confront the cowboys. Take in a reenactment of their gunfight. Grab a bite to eat or quench your thirst at one of the many watering holes. Ride a stagecoach. Visit the Tombstone Courthouse, now functioning as a museum. Pay your respects at the Boot Hill Graveyard. Or visit the Birdcage Theater Museum, where you might catch a glimpse of alleged ghosts. Enter the Good Enough Silver Mine and learn what it took to mine in the 1880s. Schedule a visit during one of Tombstone's festivities, including Showdown in Tombstone every September and El Dorado Days in October. TombstoneChamber.com. Prescott, Arizona. Gold was discovered in 1863 near present-day Prescott. The following year, Prescott was founded and declared Arizona's territorial capital. Many well-known characters called Prescott home or passed through. Virgil Earp lived there from 1877 to 1879. On October 16, 1877, U.S. Marshal Wiley Standifer and Sheriff Ed Bowers deputized Virgil to help arrest George Wilson, also known as George Vaughn, wanted for murder in Texas. Wilson was spotted in Prescott with a friend, John Talos, taking pot shots at a stray dog. In the ensuing gun battle, Virgil's skill with his Winchester was credited with inflicting the most damage to the desperados who died of their wounds. Virgil served as Prescott's night watchman, and he was later elected as one of the city's two constables. Another famous Prescott peace officer, William Bucky O'Neill, served as Yavapai County Sheriff from 1890 until 1894. At the outbreak of the Spanish-American War, O'Neill joined the Rough Riders, only to be killed by a sniper before the Battle of San Juan Hill. Experience Prescott's Western charm. Stroll along Whiskey Row, which at one time boasted over 40 saloons. Visit the Palace Restaurant and Saloon, where most likely Doc Holliday, Wyatt, and Virgil Earp imbibed at its predecessor, the Cabinet Saloon. Stay at a dude ranch, go horseback riding, or enjoy a cowboy cookout in the surrounding area. Immerse yourself in the Charlotte Hall Museum. Tour its historic buildings and experience Arizona life during the late 19th century through its Living History program. Over the 4th of July, attend Prescott's Frontier Days Rodeo, held since 1888. Online, visit-prescott.com. Fort Smith, Arkansas. In 1817, the Army established Fort Smith on the Arkansas River at the western border of Arkansas, where a town with the same name flourished around the fort. The region to the west became known as Indian Territory as the federal government evicted eastern tribes and relocated them there. Indians had their own legal systems but had no jurisdiction over whites, so Indian Territory became a natural attractant to outlaws. By 1871, the federal district judge and marshal responsible for Arkansas and Indian Territory relocated their offices to Fort Smith, and in 1875, President Ulysses Grant appointed Isaac Charles Parker as their district judge. Parker strictly interpreted the federal law for capital offenses and was nicknamed the Hanging Judge after simultaneously hanging six men before a throng of 5,000 witnesses. 200 deputy U.S. marshals scoured Indian Territory, bringing in criminals they didn't kill in gun battles. During Parker's 21 years on the bench, he tried 13,490 cases, of which 9,454 were convictions. Visit the Fort Smith National Historic Site. Enter the jails and Judge Parker's courtroom. Visit exhibits on deputy U.S. marshals and the outlaws they combated, and contemplate the reconstructed gallows. Fort Smith is also the location of the U.S. Marshals Museum. Don't miss the 25-foot-tall monument commemorating Bass Reeves, the first black deputy U.S. Marshal west of the Mississippi. Reeves made over 3,000 arrests and killed 14 outlaws. Fort Smith has plenty of festivals, including June's Old Fort Days Rodeo and October's Fort Smith Fall Festival, featuring outlaw and lawman reenactments. Online, fortsmith.org. Dodge City, Kansas. Several miles west of Fort Dodge on the Santa Fe Trail, a small collection of tent saloons and soddies where soldiers drank and buffalo hunters sold hides, boomed when the railroad arrived and became known as Dodge City in 1872. Dodge City had plenty of nicknames, including the wickedest town in America. Within its first year, 15 men were killed and buried in Boot Hill. In 1875, Texas cattlemen began arriving with herds to ship east. Cowboys were ready to cut loose. One enjoyment was hurrahing the town, racing their horses and running in the streets while whooping and firing their six-shooters. Take young men who had not seen a woman for weeks, add alcohol and guns, and there was bound to be trouble. More than one law enforcement officer decided to get the hell out of Dodge. Lawmen, including Ford County Sheriff Bat Masterson and Assistant Marshal Wyatt Earp, worked to establish order. The goal was not to kill rowdy cowboys, that was bad for business, but to tamp down their exuberance. There were still many gunfights and shootings in town. A must-see is the Boot Hill Museum. Stroll along recreated Front Street and into its buildings where Old West artifacts are displayed. During the summer, enjoy dance hall music and acts, as well as mock gun battles in the street. Dodge City has plenty of fun places to enjoy a good steak, such as Casey's Cowtown Club. Don't miss the Western excitement of Dodge City Days, held at the end of July. Online, visit dodgecity.org. Northfield, Minnesota. Northfield, a small prosperous town 40 miles south of St. Paul, Minnesota, didn't have a gunfighter reputation. That changed on September 7, 1876, when eight strangers rode into town. They were members of one of America's most successful band of robbers, the James Younger Gang. Although Frank and Jesse James denied involvement and the younger brothers never ratted on them, most everyone believes the James boys were involved in the robbery. At 2 p.m., three bandits entered the First National Bank and botched the robbery, stealing only $26.60, wounding teller Alonzo Bunker, and shooting in the head bookkeeper and acting cashier Joseph Hayward. Learning of the robbery in progress, citizens began shooting at the outlaws in the street. When the James Younger gang rode away and the smoke cleared, two outlaws lay dead in the street, and one citizen would soon die of a head wound. You can still visit the scene of the crime. The Northfield Historical Society has restored the First National Bank to the way it looked the day the robbers entered. Next door in the same building, an exhibit details the robbery, shootout, and manhunt for the criminals. The exhibit displays firearms used in the gun battle, an outlaw's saddle, and the bank's ledger book. Northfield holds its annual Defeat of Jesse James Days over the weekend closest to September 7th, celebrating the townspeople's victory over the James Younger gang. Each day of the festivities, reenactments of the bank robbery and street battle are performed. Online, visit northfield.org. Lincoln County, New Mexico. New Mexico's Lincoln County was the setting for a series of murders and gun battles known as the Lincoln County War. One faction, started with merchants Lawrence Murphy and Jimmy Dolan, was known as the House because of the large two-story building that housed their business. Later, a third partner, John H. Riley, joined Murphy and Dolan. The other faction, headed by John Tunstall and Alexander McSween, were called the Regulators. A series of events led to Tunstall's murder by House members on February 18, 1878. Tunstall employee, Billy the Kid, vowed vengeance, resulting in the Kid ambushing and shooting House supporter Sheriff William Brady on Lincoln's main street. Later, House members besieged and set fire to McSween's home in Lincoln. McSween and several Regulators were killed as they fled the burning house. The Kid escaped to fight again. Eventually, Sheriff Pat Garrett captured the Kid, and he was sentenced to be hanged. However, the Kid killed two of Garrett's deputies and escaped from the Lincoln County Jail, the former house building. The town of Lincoln is now a historic site. Seven of its 17 preserved structures are open. Visit the building that belonged to the house and was later the Lincoln County Courthouse. Enter the room where Billy the Kid was jailed. 10 miles west is Fort Stanton, which figured significantly in the Lincoln County War. Although only one building used as the museum is open, you can walk around the fort's 88 buildings. Plan to attend Old Lincoln Days and the Last Escape of Billy the Kid, held every August. Online, LincolnCountyNM.gov. Deadwood, South Dakota. Deadwood began as an outlaw town. It wasn't supposed to exist. Located in South Dakota's Black Hills, Deadwood mushroomed into existence along Whitewood Creek with the discovery of gold in December 1875. The Black Hills were located within the Great Sioux Reservation. No whites were allowed. But after Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer's 1874 Black Hills expedition discovered gold, the army couldn't hold back the hordes of prospectors. Deadwood had no government, no law enforcement. Prudent people armed themselves. Legendary gunfighter Wild Bill Hickok rode into Deadwood only to be assassinated, shot in the back of the head by Jack McCall on August 2, 1876. Citizens organized a miners' court that released McCall after he lied, saying Hickok had killed his brother. Days later, Saloon No. 10 bartender Harry Young shot and killed bummer Dan Baum. Another miner's court released Young, who claimed self-defense because he believed bummer Dan was another man he was feuding with. Gamblers Johnny Varnes and Charlie Storms shot at each other in the street until they were out of bullets. Friends convinced them to stop, and all went to a saloon for a drink. Take a walking tour or ride the stagecoach down Deadwood streets and imagine what it was like during Deadwood's wild days. Witness gunfight reenactments and Jack McCall's trial. Visit the Adams Museum, which may have one of Hickok's guns, and examine the Days of 76 Museum's collection of artifacts. Deadwood holds Wild Bill Days in June, and in July, the Days of 76 Parade and Rodeo. Online, deadwood.com. Amarillo, Texas. In the late 1880s, developers established Amarillo along the Fort Worth and Denver City Railroad in the Texas Panhandle's cattle country. Although Amarillo was a latecomer, plenty of gun battles happened in the region. Whites and Indians fought two battles at Adobe Walls, 87 miles to the northeast. The first was on November 25, 1864, when Kit Carson led troops and Indian allies against an overwhelming number of Kiowa and Comanche warriors. Carson wisely withdrew. The second battle began on June 27, 1874, when 700 Comanche, Kiowa, Cheyenne, and Arapaho warriors attacked a band of buffalo hunters that included Bat Masterson, Billy Dixon, and Bill Tilghman, who were able to repel their attackers. Mobeetie, which was known as Sweetwater at the time, 110 miles northeast of Amarillo, was the scene of a January 24, 1876 gunfight between Corporal Melvin King and Bat Masterson. King considered Molly Brennan his girl, and when he learned Bat and Molly were together at a nearby bar, he burst in, guns blazing, seriously wounding Bat and killing Molly before Bat could fire into King's chest, the bullet that killed him. Tascosa, 40 miles northwest, was Billy the Kid's hangout after the Lincoln County War and the scene of the big fight at Jenkins Saloon, where, on March 21, 1886, a feud between two ranches left four people dead. While in Amarillo, visit the American Quarter Horse Museum or the Panhandle Plains Museum. Feeling hungry? Try to beat the 72-ounce steak challenge at Big Texan Steak Ranch. Attend one of Amarillo's many rodeos or the Cowboy Mounted Shooters Association event in October. Online, visitamarillo.com. Cheyenne, Wyoming. Cheyenne got its start in 1867 as an end-of-the-tracks Union Pacific Railroad town, a hell-on-wheels town, a movable, rough-and-tumble collection of tents and shanties catering to railroad workers by providing gambling, liquor, and female companionship. Francis E. Warren, Wyoming's first governor and one of its first U.S. senators, said every man slept with from one to a half dozen revolvers under his pillow. From debrigations of every character could be expected at any hour, day or night. Cheyenne attracted Bat Masterson, Wyatt Earp, and Wild Bill Hickok. On October 24, 1902, stock detective Tom Horn was convicted of first-degree murder in the shooting death of 14-year-old Willie Nickel. Sentenced to be hanged, Horn was housed in Cheyenne's Laramie County Jail. On August 9, 1903, Horn and fellow inmate Jim McLeod overpowered a guard, armed themselves, and escaped. A crowd soon caught McLeod. Horn could not figure out how to release the safety on his pistol to fire it. His pursuers shot at him, one bullet creasing the top of his head. Horn was captured, returned to jail, and on November 20th, 1903, he was hanged in Cheyenne. To learn about Cheyenne's interesting sites and historic buildings, ride the Cheyenne Street Railway trolley, and to learn more history, tour the Cheyenne Depot Museum and the Cheyenne Frontier Days Old West Museum. During the summer, enjoy the Western Gunslinger show of gunfights and skits. Visit Cheyenne during its 10-day Frontier Day celebration in July with its parades, shows, and rodeos. Online, Cheyenne.org. Laramie, Wyoming. Laramie, established in July 1867, was another end-of-the-tracks Union Pacific Railroad town. One of its first lawmen was Deputy City Marshal Big Steve Long. On October 22, 1867, a fistfight broke out between four cowboys and four Illinois newcomers. Big Steve was unsuccessful in breaking up the fight until he pulled two six-shooters and fired into the brawlers, killing five. That December, two prospectors were arguing over whose turn it was to buy the next round of drinks in the Baby Doll Saloon. Big Steve ordered them to settle down. When they didn't listen, he shot and killed them both, as well as a bystander. Lawman Big Steve moonlighted as an outlaw. On October 18, 1868, he attempted to rob a prospector, Hard Luck Harrigan, who shot back, wounding Big Steve. He asked his fiancée to treat the wound. When she learned what happened, she told the Vigilance Committee, which promptly hanged Big Steve from a telegraph pole. In 1872, the federal government built the Wyoming Territorial Prison, which later was turned over to the state of Wyoming. In June 1894, outlaw Butch Cassidy entered the prison after he was convicted of being in possession of a stolen horse, valued at $5. Butch was a model prisoner, and the governor pardoned him in January 1896. There's plenty for the history lover. The Laramie Plains Museum, Laramie Historic Train Depot, Wyoming Territorial Prison, and University of Wyoming's American Heritage Center, among the largest archives in the nation. Attend Laramie's Jubilee Days, held in July with rodeos, parade, and a carnival. Online, visit laramie.org. Bill Markley's latest book with dueling co-author Kellen Cutsforth is Standoff at High Noon, Another Battle Over the Truth in the Mythic Wild West. True West Magazine, June 2022 edition. Battle of the Plaza by Bob Bozbell. Bat Masterson versus Peacock and Updegraph. Things go lickety-bang. Bullets careen into the Long Branch. Traveling mostly by rail, Bat Masterson has just covered 1,100 miles to come to the aid of his estranged brother, Jim. Bat was just in Tombstone, Arizona territory, with Wyatt Earp when he received word of threats against his brother's life. As the Dodge City-bound train pulls into the Kansas Depot from the west, Bat swings down off the train on the north side of the tracks. It is about noon. His intuition tells him his brother's enemies may attempt to round him up at the depot. He scans the train platform and the busy streets, looking for trouble. As the caboose passes, he notices two men on the opposite side of the tracks, walking toward the depot. Bat immediately recognizes both men and shouts, "Hold up there a minute, you two! I want to talk to you." Lady Gay saloon owner A.J. Peacock and his brother-in-law, bartender Al Updegraph, take one look at the familiar, stocky figure striding toward them and turn on their heels, ducking behind the corner of the jail. Jim is partners with Peacock at the saloon, and the two had disagreed over firing Updegraph, a dishonest drunk in Jim's eyes. All parties pull weapons and begin to bang away at each other. It's unclear which side fires first. Bat retreats to the railroad track's 3-foot berm and hides behind it. Bullets snap over Bat's head and thud into Dr. McCarty's drugstore on the north side of Front Street. Bat returns fire, knocking huge splinters of wood from the corner of the hoosegow. Soon, Bat is fired upon from several Southside saloons as Deadline partisans join the fray. The compliment is returned from the north side of the tracks as friendly fire, probably from Jim and his friends, rips into the Southside buildings. Bullets careen into the Long Branch Saloon, sending patrons scrambling out the back door. Owner Chalk Beeson seeks refuge behind the door of his safe. George Hoover's saloon loses a window, and a bullet tears a newspaper from an idler's hands. Amidst the wild firing, Updegraff suddenly pitches forward as a bullet rips through his chest. Not long after, Bat and Peacock run out of bullets. Mayor A.B. Webster runs up and sticks a Fox shotgun barrel in Bat's face. Learning from the mayor that his brother is alive, Bat surrenders and hands over his empty six guns. Aftermath, odds and ends. A hearing was held and formal charges were brought against Bat Masterson. The complaint stated that W.B. Masterson did, unlawfully, feloniously, discharge a pistol upon the streets of said city. Bat pleaded guilty and was fined $8 in costs. Jim Masterson dissolved his partnership with A.J. Peacock, and both brothers left town on the evening train. Ford County Globe claimed they were allowed to leave town with the understanding that they were not to return. Of course, Bat Masterson did return in April of 1883 to come to the aid of his friend Luke Short, who had been harassed by the town fathers. The authorities arrested three female singers in Short's Long Branch Saloon. Other saloons were spared harassment. Short puts out the call to Bat Masterson, who in turn summits Wyatt Earp and the rest of the Dodge City gang, who converged on Dodge. Wyatt negotiated a satisfactory settlement for Short, and they all retired to a portrait studio to have their picture taken. Al Updegraff insisted Bat hadn't shot him. Writing in his hometown paper, Medicine Lodge Index, later reprinted in Ford County Globe, Updegraff claimed, "We were fired at by parties from the saloon doors on the north side of Front Street, from one of which I was shot through the right lung." Although he survived his chest wound, Updegraff died 2 years later of smallpox. After the Battle of the Plaza, Jim Masterson left Dodge City with his brother Bat. Jim worked in law enforcement in Colorado, New Mexico, and Oklahoma until his death from tuberculosis at the age of 39 on March 31st, 1895. Recommended, Bat Masterson, The Man and the Legend by Robert K. DeGarment, published by University of Oklahoma Press. In 1999, Bob Bozbell and partners bought True West Magazine, published since 1953, and moved the editorial offices to Cave Creek, Arizona. Bell has published and illustrated books on Billy the Kid, Wyatt Earp, and Doc Holliday, as well as Classic Gunfights, an Old West gunfight book series. His latest books are The 66 Kid and True West Moments.
Thank you for joining us for the Western Magazine Hour. Stories and articles about the American West. Your narrator has been Jack. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.